As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Welcome to this episode of the podcast, the Elite Advisor Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. Today, we're going to be hanging out with Dr. Jared Spencer. Jared works with high-level performers, talking about the mind-body connection, not just emotional work, but the psychology around knowing yourself, how to get the most out of yourself. I have found we can read a bunch of books, learn a bunch about financial planning. A lot of tactical things are great, and they can help your business grow incrementally. But what are the things that if you tap into it and unlock it, will get you 10x, 100x results? And a lot of that is knowing yourself, knowing your tendencies so you can manage against them. Why is your business not where you want it to be? There's a good chance the stuff that I'm going to talk about with Dr. Spencer today is part of that. Are you aware of it? And are you on the journey of unlocking that part of yourself? Today will be a great start. Jared, thanks for being here with us.
It's a pleasure, man. So excited to spend some time with you, Sten.
You bet. So to address the formalities up front, it's Dr. Jared Spencer, published author. You have a great resume. And so I know we'll call you Jared moving forward, but I'd love to hear your background on how you got into the business you're in. So if you kind of catch us up on that, and then I'd love to, the folks you're talking to are advisors, entrepreneurs. And so we'll get into your superpower and the stuff you teach people, but quick background would be great.
Sure. Yeah. I'm really a concierge health and sports psychologist. I'm fascinated by how the mind works and how that relates to health and performance. And so I work in pro sports a lot, been with several professional teams, have a private practice with a bunch of pro athletes or elite high level performers at companies like Microsoft, and been to help athletes in the Super Bowl, Indianapolis 500, World Series, Paris Olympics, and wrote a couple books. Got another one coming out in 2026. And at the end of the day, I'm just a dorky dad with three kids, a wonderful wife, and I love sharing what I can with people to help them thrive and be the healthiest version of themselves.
Love it. Do your kids know how cool you are and everybody you work with?
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, when you're dad, you know, you don't really know anything, you know, it's a bunch of teenagers and young adults.
Nice. Are you teasing the new book yet? Have you dropped the title or anything?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The title is Emotional Energy, Your Fuel for Better Health and Performance. It's in the final editing stages right now. And I'm really excited about its impact it's going to have on people.
Love that. Before I wrote books, I think I took for granted the amount of time and energy that was required to write a book.
Right.
So now that I've been through that process, every time someone says they're doing it, I'm like, that for $20, somebody gets 2 years potentially worth of work, energy, sweat. So books are, it's the whole thing of a reader's lead and leader's read, because it's powerful when somebody like you takes that, spends 2 years or maybe more putting it in a simple form. That's a gift.
Right. Yeah, I appreciate that. And obviously, when you write a book, you know, you really write it because you love the content and you want to help people. You're not looking to make a buck. Author of me just means authority on. And
go.
It's really about just sharing a passion.
So take us back to what got you into this space, because you have to have some authority, some knowledge to probably have the confidence to go to high performers and say, hey, you need me. So what was that journey like to get to that place where you got into the niche you're in now?
Yeah, it was really kind of pioneering a niche, even way back to college, where I made up a major called psychobiology, where people said, what are you going to do, hypnotize fish for a living? But I was really interested in mind-body connection, and that led to a doctorate in health psychology working in hospital settings. And I really enjoy the medical aspect of things. But I found that when I was sharing that information with high performers, particularly athletes, they resonated with the same type of content, understanding neuroscience, like how the brain actually works, how the body works, and understanding the physiology behind the psychology. When I shared that with high performers in sports, it was an easy, instant translation to, wow, now I'm performing better. And having been a college football player and wrestler myself, I understood that journey. So that quickly translated to the highest levels of sports. And since the pandemic, the stigma on mental health has fallen. So now corporate is much more open to receiving this kind of information as well.
Is it a lot of emotional, or when you say psychological, I guess that sounds a little different than like emotional work. Like I've done emotional high level work. And
sure.
How do you separate the two?
Yeah, absolutely. When we think of the word mental, a lot of times we think of the mind, or we think of like more thoughts, cerebral. When we think of emotional, we think of much more visceral. We think of the body, how we're feeling, something much deeper. And so I tend to focus more on the emotional health, the feeling part, the deep visceral part. And when we can pay attention to that level of work, I feel like it's much deeper than just the mental.
I know when I played sports back in the day, and I don't know, it's because I grew up in Oregon at small schools, and maybe the big ones have been talking about this stuff for a long time, but it does feel like, and I have kids now, at one point it was like just lift weights, try hard, and you know, some people have it and some people don't. What's been the evolution of that to where it feels like now it's coming down market to like even high schools are teaching about the psychology stuff. My cousin was a high-level volleyball player, and it's like there was a point she got to where this started being incorporated. Was it because it was kind of new, or it just was for a long time just reserved for like the highest performers?
No, I think there was really two distinct moments where the world opened up to it. I marked these two moments. When Naomi Osaka withdrew from the French Open, the whole sports world said, hey, it's okay. She's got some mental health concerns. And that's when I was on like CNN New Day in New York City. And that was like a big moment. But then who would have thought like a few months later that when Simone Biles withdrew from the Olympics for mental health and well-being, that's when I was on BBC, CNN International, Fox, everywhere around the world, like was saying, hey, it's okay not to be okay. And really from those moments, what we've seen is, yeah, at the high school level, in every corporation, in every school, we now know that, yes, we have to incorporate this and include this and do this. It's no longer an option. It's if you want to succeed at the highest level, sure, you have to work on the 6 inches between the ears. But there's also a massive mental health crisis in America because we have a massive sleep deprivation, which is due to cell phone addiction, and away we go.
Wow. Yeah. So what's the line? Because with high performers sitting around and saying, hey, it's okay to not show up if you're not feeling it, I'm guessing that's not the conversation. It's like, I still want to perform, which requires resilience, grit, like, yet I want to get there in a healthier way. Or is there a point where you're helping people find their threshold and saying it is not healthy for you to go any farther because your capacity is different?
Well, they don't want to do that. Okay. So for example, you know, with one pro team I worked with, well, if you're not able to compete today, then there's a bunch of other guys right behind
That's
you
right.
that would happily love to take your spot.
Yeah.
And you're gonna lose a lot of money on the deal. And so the athlete, the last thing they want to do is not compete. And so they're looking for every angle and every opportunity and every way for them to compete, even if they're going through, you know, life, right? Like we all have, like people die, people get sick, you know, there are some serious problems. And so they're always looking for like, whatever it takes to get me out there. And I understand that, you know, the mental is a big part of it. That's the storyline that I'm usually with.
Got it. So there's an element of like, I'm going to help you show up in this moment, but there's a lot more work to be done. Like showing up doesn't always mean like you're healthy or you've resolved what's ever going on.
No, not at all. Because really the concept of the next book and the concept that I'm really hot on right now is that of emotional energy management. And so when we show up, how's your emotional energy? Because when our emotional energy is higher and we feel better, we can thrive and we can do amazing things. But even the very best, most well-developed people in the world at times have a day where their emotional energy is a little lower. And if that's the case, and you're on a big stage when the lights are bright, you might not be performing at your best, and that could be costly.
I heard somebody once talk about how a lot of times our trauma helps us succeed, which is then praised. And I know this is kind of my story on, like, if you succeed, you get attention. Attention feels good. So I just want to keep getting attention. Even if that means the way you're going about getting attention is you're overworking yourself, you know, we're forgetting to sleep well, eat well.
Right.
What comes up in you when I say that, because I hear that from a lot of professionals too, that it's like, hey, what I'm doing is working to some degree. A lot of us hit a wall eventually. Some see it coming and they just don't know another way. How does what you're talking about transfer to, like, the professional space when people still want to perform at a high level?
Well, everyone's greatest strengths are oftentimes their greatest weaknesses as well. So what makes a person great, such as work ethic, and that may be one way they learn how to deal with emotional trauma, is hard work, but that becomes the very thing that undermines, for example, their marriage, because their spouse says, you're never around, you're just always working so hard. So when it comes to the emotional woundedness, right, like, I heard somebody say, we spend the first 18 years of life learning how to live, and then we spend the next 80 years trying to undo all the negative junk from the first 18, right?
Yes, that's fair. Yeah.
And for many, many high performers, they just found a way to channel that hurt into something productive, not destructive. They found a way to make it work for them. The mess became the mission. The pain became the purpose. And so if that's unconscious, it's not really fully understood, then that fuel can later on become problematic in a person's life. And if they're not consciously aware of it, they haven't, like, looked within, if they haven't kind of figured some of that stuff out and done some of the good therapeutic work. And so that is very powerful because it leads to a clearer mind. And when one's mind is clear, their emotional energy is higher and they feel better, perform better.
Yeah. So what practically is the process? Part of my mind is going to, like, you have to at least know this is existing within you to know that it needs to be addressed. I mean, is there a step before that where people just need to even know this area of science exists and that it's worth doing? Like, where do you find most people meet you initially?
Well, there's really kind of two steps in the process, right? One is the outside in head knowledge, right? So listen to a podcast like this and it's going to give you good outside in information, which can make one develop their EQ in that way. That's half the battle. The other half of the battle is go within, really talk about it, like real good, like professional dialogue, therapy, counseling, coaching, but really know thyself. And if you do the inside out process, that's the counseling, the outside in, that's the head knowledge, the two together is what leads to a higher EQ. And leadership is predicated upon EQ, not IQ. And so the most emotionally developed people have higher EQs. The problem is that even the most emotionally developed people have days when their emotional energy is lower, that EQ unravels, and we don't need to look far in sports or news or politics to see another great leader have a fall from grace because of a moment of weakness.
Got it. So I'm going to assume that for a while, people would come to you, like, in a moment of need. And then maybe that's shifting where people are proactively saying, hey, I think I need this even though I'm not in crisis. How has that shifted over time with some of this openness and culture and the revelations we're all having? Are people seeking you out more in moments of, hey, I don't think I have a problem, I want to get better?
You know, Stan, for a large part of my career was banging on doors and saying, hey, let me share this idea with you. But really, the pandemic changed everything. So, for example, when the pandemic hit, I joined NordicTrack Treadmills, and I'm one of their iFit trainers on there. So you can go on a NordicTrack treadmill and hike 17 mountains with me while I talk about different sports psychology concepts. Or nice. Microsoft hired me, and if you were working at Microsoft and part of their company, you would see 7 videos on emotional energy, and they rolled those out as I came in a couple times a year to speak to their company and coach up individuals. And so that is all the more positive, proactive approach that's occurred since the pandemic, where it's like, hey, we like to get out in front of this if we're, you know, leaders in industries, as opposed to before where it was trying to sell it. Now we don't have to sell anything. It's this is a competitive advantage that everybody wants.
Wow. What I'm hearing now is that people can't find professionals that are like there's wait lists. And I mean, are you kind of to a place where you're like, hey, I'm capped out, and writing books and speaking is kind of the only other way to get the message out?
Yeah. For the clientele that I serve, which is kind of like an upper echelon, there's always a little bit of room for those, you know, kind of high capacity, high net worth kind of individuals. But it's a real niche kind of practice that I run. When I say to the family and friends, when they say, hey, can you refer me to somebody? That's usually where the problem develops, because most people have a full calendar, a long wait list, and I can cash in from some favors to say, hey, look, you know, could you really help this person out? And somebody might get bumped up on that list. But the truth is, we have a massive need for more people in this space to help individuals with the mental, emotional aspects of life.
Yeah. Wow. So kind of getting practical, if we're talking to financial advisors, entrepreneurs, where does this start? I know I meet with people and they like, hey, I'm good. I'm kind of fine. The status quo, change is hard. Typically there's some external event that forces them into this, but let's just say people know the highest performers have figured out something that most people have not.
Right.
How would you go about the people listening kind of saying, okay, there is something here that I need to unpack further, like raising that awareness?
Well, it's like the old saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And for myself personally, and for many people I know, it's not that people wouldn't want to do this. It's just, I don't know who. I don't want to just go see anybody. So the way this industry tends to work is somebody would say, I got a guy. Trust me, this is the guy. This is who you want to talk to. And so that's usually how most people are willing to begin the process and access this whole path, is when the right person appears. So for example, like, who knows, like maybe somebody's listening to this. Maybe I'm that teacher that appears right now for somebody who says, I'm in, I want to do this. Yep. And I want to go down that path. And so great. That's oftentimes how it would happen, is that somebody just feels like, I saw you or I heard about you. And that's how I accessed it.
And what's unlocked? So for the people listening, obviously you're doing this actively with athletes and high performers now. Yeah. Does it take months of kind of like tilling the soil and like say before we see some pop, or can it be pretty immediate results once you get a hold of them?
It's a really great question. And so I think it's a lot like going to the gym, quite frankly. You know, like if you really want to work out the body and you really want to develop some muscle, like you're going to have to put in the time. But after a year, people will say, oh my gosh, you've transformed. You look totally different. And I think that's really true with the mind as well, that there are some people that may want to do like a 7-session coaching program package. And like, yeah, absolutely. You get a lot of benefit from that. Yeah. And then there are other people that have done thousands of hours, right? And so there's no end to it. It's just a question of how much time, energy, money, and really what's the back end motivation for the person. So it's easy, like in the NFL, right? Because it's like, I want to be in the league as long as I possibly can, because it's a cash grab and I just want to stay healthy and do what I can. So whatever it takes to stay in the league, like I'm in and I'll do the work. And then when I'm not in the league, maybe I'm not, right? So sports has like kind of a self-contained. So what if somebody's not, maybe they're in wealth management, financial advisor. And it's like, well, what's the motivation now? And it's like, well, hopefully it's an intrinsic drive of, I just want to be the best version of myself.
Yeah.
Right. And I want to be on top of my game. And if I am, and my emotional energy is higher, then I know I can crush it. Yeah. But sometimes it comes more from an external perspective where it's like, look, you know, privately, the marriage is struggling and there is a concern there. And it's like, wow, if I don't work on me, then this might not work out in terms of my marriage. So that might be the hidden drive. And so the interesting thing is a licensed doctoral level sports psychologist or just psychologist in general, everything we talk about is confidential. So these are the kind of things that the world would never typically know about. But it's like, yeah, that person's really struggling in a particular area of their life that you would have no idea. But it is very, very important because that's the biggest energy suck in their life. And if they could just have somebody to get help them figure that out, then they could be liberated.
Hmm. So we talk a lot in our community about resistance, like the awareness of things that are holding you back from your potential. And how do you respond when those things happen? In this process, what resistance do you arises when you start trying to get somebody to go down this path? Is it, I don't think I can handle what's about to come out. This feels too uncomfortable. I run away. What's some of the head trash that happens?
It's a process that oftentimes a person will test me out and they'll say, you know, I want to talk about this. And it's very important that I not take the bait and think that this is the real issue they're coming for, because the reality is that it's more of a test. Like, you know, like I'll throw something out there and see what you have to say about it and see if that works and see if that, you know, is beneficial for me. And then when I am successful with that one, then they'll throw another something out and we'll go a little deeper. So it's like peeling the layers of an onion. And then eventually, you know, across some time, rapport develops. And when rapport is there, then a person can say, look, I really trust you and I never shared this with anybody, but, you know, here's something that has haunted me my whole life. And if they truly believe that I have the knowledge and the skills and the ability and the heart to help them, once we get to that level, it's life-changing. So it's usually a process of time and conversations that lead a person to get to that place.
Is it fair to say everyone should prioritize and do deep intentional work in this space? It's just a matter of time. Because I'm thinking of all the advisors listening, and this was true of me as a young advisor until kind of life forced me to face a lot of this stuff. Because I was like, things are okay. I'm gradually growing. There's no huge catalyst. For people that are listening that have not prioritized this type of work, is it fair to say the sooner you do it, the better? You're missing out? Or how direct would you be with that advice?
I'd just be that direct with it. Like, you need to do it. It's going to be the Achilles heel. It'll be a person's limitations are nearly always emotional ones.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, intellectually, it's like, yeah, intellectually you can do it. Mm. Financially, sure, you may be blessed with a lot of financial means. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But eventually, what trips a person up is it's always the emotional. And so I talked to one amazing person about 2 weeks ago, and we just had a little heart-to-heart conversation. And he said, I just wish I would have done this earlier, but now my life has kind of gone down some pretty dark paths, and he was unbelievably successful. And he said, now that I've started doing this work, like, it's so revolutionary to me, but I just wish I would have done it sooner. And given that we live in a culture and society that is got massive cell phone addiction, and consequently the mental health that's associated with that, it's absolutely vital that we all understand some of the health psychology, the basics of like sleep, you know, like and how sleep impacts anxiety and all the little tricks of the trade. So one small example I'll tell people is, the consistency of sleep matters the most. You need 3 nights of good sleep in order to feel really good, which is why people usually feel the best in America on Thursdays. And one should always schedule all their most important meetings in the financial industry on Thursdays, because you're going to have great productivity. But don't schedule them on Mondays, because that's when people feel the worst in America. And it's all related to sleep. But most people don't even know that there's a minute every day that a person should fall asleep each night, but they don't even know the minute because they're lying in bed looking at their cell phone, giving themselves anti-melatonin right after they literally just took their melatonin. and then they're saying, I can't fall asleep. But if they knew that every night the pineal gland releases melatonin and it gives you a great big wave of fatigue, makes you say, oh man, I'm getting tired. As soon as that big yawn occurs tonight for everybody, that yawn, 1 hour after that yawn, is the ideal minute a person would enter their circadian rhythm and fall asleep. So if you have the big yawn, you dim the lights, you take a shower, you read a book for pleasure, you put the phone on the opposite side of the bedroom, and you allow yourself to enter that three nights in a row, and you will literally think clearly, feel amazing, performance is going to skyrocket. But for most people, they lie in the bed with their phone, they know they shouldn't, they're not hitting their consistent sleep, and they have anxiety, they're underperforming, they're irritable, cranky, moody, the low emotional energy, and then they wonder why it's just not clicking for them.
Yeah. So what, how do you address that? I mean, I think that's the head in. I think most people probably wouldn't disagree with that.
Right. Yeah.
Is it for most people, there's a couple things, two layers deep that are really causing them to stay stuck in that? Like, because they know they shouldn't, yet they keep doing it.
Yeah. And if they're willing to stop it, then the person lying next to them in the bed often isn't. And so now that's another, that's even more complicated, right? Yeah. And so giving practical, realistic skills for how one could think better, feel better, perform better by understanding the brain, understanding the science, and given gems like that, if I gave 100 more gems like that, then it's people like, okay, I'm starting to see how I can just optimize. Mm-hmm. And that that experience of like, now I'm starting to feel good, that's usually the reinforcer as to like why they want more. Mm-hmm. And they want to go down that path. But sadly, you know, the cell phone addiction piece, that's so significant. I can't underestimate it enough. It's so significant that most people say, great, I agree with everything this guy is saying. I just can't stop scrolling at night.
Wow. You brought that up a few times. Is that something that you've kind of, your passion's grown on, like the cell phone piece?
And yeah,
it's on everything?
It really is.
Okay.
Yeah, the number one most popular speech that I give is sleep the number one factor in mental health and performance. And it's all about how we can improve our mental, emotional health through better sleep. But in order to deal with sleep, we also have to deal with cell phone addiction. That space right there has been the most requested speech, probably give it 25 times a year. Nice. It's really the start. That is what, like, because I'll tell people, there's nothing I can do to help you. I literally can't do anything to help you with your mind if I don't first help you with your sleep.
Got it.
It's not going to stick. So I can give you all the best performance anxiety management techniques, but if you're not sleeping well, it's not going to stick.
Wow.
And so it's very, very important that we first deal with the sleep part.
All right. So as we wrap up, for everybody listening, what is the best next step? I do think there's enough content out there now, which I'm thankful for. This isn't a new topic. I don't think people are probably like, that's crazy. Doesn't make sense at all. Yet I still find, because I went down some deep work in this over the last few years, that most people have not done the work. Like, they don't know the language. Like, if you try to talk to people about it, they're kind of like, yeah, that doesn't land. What's the practical next step? Maybe it's which book should they read first of yours? Like, what's the first thing?
Well, I'm a little bit biased, but the book Mind of the Athlete, Clear Mind, Better Performance, available on Amazon. That book really explains a model for how the mind works best. And it really does unpack the deep levels of the pre-conscious mind, the ex-conscious mind, the unconscious mind. It gives terminology as well as practical skills on how. And the book is written in a short manner, because I know that typically athletes don't want to read books. So I wrote it thin. But that book there is the practical next step, because it's in 3 hours, one can read it or listen to the audiobook and really get a grasp of, instead of wrestling against the mind, just understand how it works and work with it. That is a very important first step. And because I was frustrated because I couldn't find much literature out there on that, I ended up writing that book. And so that's actually the second most popular speech I give, is How the Mind Works Best. And that's really the crux of that book.
Love that. I wonder, with in this work, for the advisors listening, I think there was an element when I started doing it that obviously it was uncomfortable. There was a fear I'd lose my edge. Like, this feels like kind of fluffy. You know, it feels like too kumbaya-ish. Like, I just want to go out there and crush it and get attention. Yeah. Not the case at all. I think my capacity has increased to sit in things. I think if you're in business, stuff's going wrong all the time. If you're in right. sports, there's so much you can't control. And I think for me, like a calm confidence, and I think people would say now, Sten, you're more approachable. You're more curious about things. I'm trying less to control my environment to protect myself. And that stuff took years. I couldn't have told you up front, hey, this is what's going to come of it. But I will say that work, short of, you know, I'm going to business conferences, I'm going to the gym, like I'm doing all these things at a high level, but neglected the mind body side. And I would agree with you, like that's a 10x catalyst if you can tap into that piece too.
Yeah. Yeah, Sten, you get it. And I can see now why I'm on this podcast with you is because hopefully what you're trying to do is let other people know, like, there's a way, there's a path. And what I often tell people is just get on the path. You know, there are so many wonderful advisors and counselors and coaches and professors and authors and podcasts all about this genre. And if we could just introduce people to the path with some easy access ramps to get into this content, then once people are on the path, they're usually on it for life because they're blown away by how much it's beneficial to them. So I hear your heart when you're literally saying to colleagues and friends and listeners, you really want to think about this because this is transformational.
Yeah. And I think hard work will get you so far. In our business, it's not hard for an advisor to work for 10 years and eventually get comfortable. Like, hey, I'm making enough money as long as I don't screw it up. But to your point, I love the idea, like that when the student's ready, it's like, man, it's a matter of time before something hopefully triggers you. Hopefully it's a podcast or a talk. Yeah. You're like, okay, this is worth some of my time. Doesn't you need to be a PhD overnight. But right. like it, weaving this into your rhythm, that it's not just about the money skills or your book knowledge, but like, hey, there's something about knowing my tendencies. Why am I the way I am? Yeah, I think it just puts you more at peace with the world around you, and that's a win in and of itself.
You know, life is about those seemingly insignificant decisions every day. And the truth is, the more you know thyself deeply, like, you know, my thoughts, my feelings, you go within, and as you have deeper psychological insight combined with broader self-awareness, as you understand what's going on in the world around, really understanding people and complex interpersonal dynamics, with broader awareness and deeper insight comes better judgment, better decisions. Mm. And from better decisions, life's a lot easier. Since most advisors are, you know, getting paid to solve problems, we can solve problems better if we're making better decisions because we've got deeper insight and broader awareness.
Yeah, this work made me a better advisor. I think being able to sit in a room and not feeling like I have to solve your problem immediately in order to like be right. be needed. Like, no, I can sit here
right.
in the silence with you. I can be more curious with you.
Right.
There's so many reasons to do this. I would say for all the advisors listening, a side benefit is like the type of energy you will bring to an engagement. Yeah. I think now I can challenge people better because I do it in a way that they feel better afterwards, as opposed to feeling judged. And if you're a young advisor listening and you think there's advisors that are better than you and that's why they can work with higher net worth clients, not the case. Like, I remember the first time I sat with somebody that was worth so much money and I challenged them. And because I felt like, no, this is what they need from me. Like, I'm kind by telling the truth. Like, all of this came out and I'm just like, I'm a better financial advisor because of the personal work. And I would have ever thought that. I was like, this is just going to help me produce more. And it just made me more relatable.
Well, there's a wonderful question, Stan, of like, what is it like on the other side of you? And when most people don't really think about that, but when you do this kind of work, it produces a better version of you. So on the other side of you, people feel a little differently. And when an advisor does this kind of work, and on the other side of them, the clients that they're serving, they feel a greater energy radiating from that person. That's usually when people say, I want to follow you. I want to listen to you. I want your advice and I trust you. And so what is it like on the other side of you is a really great question for everyone to be asking themselves.
Love that. Jared, thank you, my friend. This was great.
So grateful for the opportunity, Stan. Really appreciate it. Sincerely.
Next time you're in Nashville, grateful. Let me know. We'll hang out.
I'm looking forward to that.
All right, buddy.